Just a few more weeks. 4 weeks, I think. Less than a month.
Oh no.
And we're going to meet up in Massachusetts.
Oh
Am
my
I going?
God.
Am I invited? You are, yeah, you better be there. Because
Okay.
if I show up and you're not there, I'm going to be angry.
Okay. I'm gonna car camp. I'm gonna be there.
This would be my first public appearance in like 6 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't even
It
leave the house to get groceries anymore. It might truly be, yeah.
right? That's why you guys are so excited about it. Just trying
Excited's
to get
a good word.
an That is a word. I was thinking about that too. That I mean, I've probably been to more things than you've been to in the last few years, but it really has been a long time since I've been to anything, any event, you know,
Well,
that's like
when was
I go to every
Louisville
event.
wasn't too long ago.
Yeah, that was 2.5 years ago.
Say that again.
That was 3 years ago.
Louisville.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's
We
true.
made the Making It table,
Yeah.
which apparently Jimmy still has.
You got to send me that address. I'll pack it this week.
Yeah,
We know who we're sending it to, right? Remember?
yeah,
Remember.
yeah.
Yeah. We'll surprise him. Get me his address. I'll mail it this week, I
I'm
promise.
pretty sure I told him about it.
Well, it's coming to him. I'm still creating it.
So yeah, it takes time.
All right, I'm gonna write it down so I remember to do
It's
it.
still sitting in the
Funny.
exact same spot 3 years ago when I took it out of my truck. I said, I got to keep it here so it preserves before. It's not in the shop. It's in my house. It's in the living room.
Well, the epoxy still has to cure.
It's almost,
Probably.
it's a little sticky, but I think it's going to be all right.
That
Poor
would
dude.
be okay. That would be hilarious and terrible if 2.5 years later, you finally create this thing up. You send it to him. He goes to open it and like pulls the top off, and the top is glued to the top of the table.
No, no,
The
no, no.
epoxy didn't
I
cure.
put plastic in between it so they'll be safe. It'll be safe. I promise.
It's a work of art, so it'd be a shame if something happened to it on the way there.
No, it would be totally fine.
But
No.
less than a month, we're meeting up for the first time in a couple of years,
No.
with a bunch of people. And the tickets, we put a link last week, I think, in the show notes. We'll put it again. Free tickets come to the Making It 500 event. We also have some hotel options. I don't think there's a block, but Caroline Shoes has posted some like local hotels to where we're going to be and stuff. So, you know, you can find a place to stay. It's going to be a good time. I'm looking
It's going
forward
to be
to it.
incredible. 9 years since the last one.
That's wild.
We could reflect. We don't have a great topic, or we don't. We did pick a topic, but we
That
could
is true.
eventually pick a topic of 9 years gone by and like reflect on 9 years. Maybe next week we could do that.
The good
Yeah.
old days.
The
About 10
Wild
years.
West.
Well, 9 since the last. Yeah,
Yeah.
you're
Yeah.
right. Crazy. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, it's gonna be a good time. There's a couple other things going on, like people speaking, other podcasts and stuff that are gonna happen. You know, it's like a full afternoon worth of hanging
Yeah.
out and
Yeah.
that stuff.
We're
So,
going to do a making fun. There's a couple things still up in the air, but we're going to do a making fun Q&A panel discussion. Everyone's going to be there from Pat Lapp to Justine. Everyone's coming.
awesome,
Yeah.
And David's gonna be there.
And I'm going to be there.
David's
Everyone's touring.
coming. David,
Right.
better come.
Now, the thing I got to figure out logistically is that day we record should be like, I figured it out now, I've forgotten. It's like 497, episode 497. It's not episode 500. So, like, what do we do about it? Did we just skip some?
No, I said we just hold on to it. Keep it in our pocket for a
Oh,
few weeks.
okay.
Yeah, we could do that.
That was easy. I was thinking it would be more complicated than that, but yeah.
I'm
You're probably right. Cool. What have you been up to this week?
working on the Woody still, which is this crazy long-term project, if you haven't paid attention. I got four videos out. And what's funny, when I blocked the videos together in a playlist, which believe it or not, I hadn't done till now, the whole playlist now is getting a little bit of a bump as
Oh.
a group of videos. Yeah, people, and then a couple of people say you got to make a they're all about 30 minutes long. You got to make a full video from start to finish, which I guess I'll do a super cut eventually. But the Woody's coming along, and the progress is really amazing. I really impressed myself. I hate to pat myself on the back, but
I'll
I
pet
really did. I really didn't expect it to come out as clean looking as it is, and the lines and everything. it's obviously always a challenge to be able to make whatever you want to think of, but also make it good looking. And I'm really happy with the progress. There's some things I would change if I was going to start over, to be perfectly honest. But there were a couple of decisions I made early on, which were too complicated to change. So I had to stick with them, like the roof line, a couple of things about the roof I changed in the back. But overall, I'm really impressed with the way it came out. And a lot of people are too. I put it on a trailer yesterday because I had to take it to get weighed. Now, a lot of people were confused. I have an agent in Albany that's like a DMV agent, New York tags and title, if you live in the area. And they will go to DMV for you. They handle it for you. And the reason I like to go to someone like that is because there's all these little loopholes and little things you forget to check and little bits of paper you forget. You'll give it to them. They'll tell you what you need, and then they go and handle it. And then if there's any bumps in the road, maybe they can handle it without you being there. But he sent me a message the other day. I gave him all the paperwork. He sent me a message. He said, unfortunately, they need a weight ticket. They need a certified scale to know how heavy it is. And I said, well, we've talked on the phone. I said, what is the point of that? I sent him all types of records based on the dimensions of this car. He's like, it's not good enough. We need a ticket. He said, and this is the reason why. If you're going to register a Camaro in New York State, they'll Google 1980 Camaro and they'll see 4,000 of them. And they all know what the weight is. Because when they Google 1947 Suburban Cadillac, nothing shows up. So they don't have a record. So you have to come in with a ticket of how much it weighs. And there's also, they want to make sure you're under the 7,000 pound commercial limit. And every state is different. In New York State, we have commercial delineation. So if your car is over 7,000, you need commercial plates, which means you can't drive on certain roads, which means you need a certain type of insurance. It makes things a lot complicated. Like my bigger truck is a commercial truck versus my little truck, which is not a commercial truck, which means I could drive anywhere I want. But if you have commercial plates, for instance, in Manhattan, you can't park overnight anywhere between, you can't park from 9 o'clock to 5 a.m. on the streets in New York City. If you have a commercial plate, you get a ticket. There's like so many dumb loopholes. This state is unbelievable.
Interesting.
And you can't drive a commercial vehicle on a parkway in New York. A lot of people who come in here don't know that. So if you have a commercial truck from your state and you're driving on the parkways here, and the main reason is all the parkways have low archways. But even if you're in a little truck that is commercially registered, even though it's not going to hit an archway, it's still illegal. So it's another little loophole for them to pull you over. If you have a commercial license plate on your truck in Manhattan, you can have an open bed. If you don't have a commercial license plate on your truck in Manhattan, you have to have a covered bed. And you'll get a ticket for that every 24 hours if you don't have a covered bed on your non-commercially registered Toyota Tundra. Ask me how I know.
Oh, man.
I'm telling you, it's so stupid. So anyway, that was the whole reason I needed a weight ticket. And I just pictured and the truck is not, I can't start it at the moment because we're in the middle of wiring. So there's loose wires everywhere. And so I had to do this as fast as possible. The Rat Rod event is coming up this weekend is the Field of Tools. It's going to be after that. So I'll talk about the Field of Tools in a minute at the Blackthorn. So it's going to be the weekend of the 18th or the 17th. And I just want to be able to drive it around, at least in the field. So I was hoping get my license plates by then. And then it's only 2 miles away, so I could drive it there if I want. And it's nice to be able to have a car that was abandoned and orphaned and then finally get recognized by the state, be like a proud dad, get a birth certificate for my new baby. Because everyone's saying, why do you need to ride? Who cares? Who cares? I'm like, it'd be nice to be able to take it to the milk run to get gas and, you know.
Yeah, it legitimizes it.
Yeah, and then if I wanted to sell it, it just makes it more valuable when someone's done the due diligence to get all the documents together.
Yeah.
It's a rebirth. Yeah, so that's what I'm working on. I'm real excited about I've reached a few hurdles, a few milestones. There's still a lot to go. So by the time I present this at this show, there's still a lot of interior stuff to do. I just got a set of seats from an old ambulance. My buddy went and picked them up for me. He sent me a picture. I'm like, yep. So he went and got them for me. So Mike, thanks for that. So now I have another project that can do the seats and make some nice seat covers. I have some ideas to these seats are good shape, but they're all beat up. So I'm going to make leather and vinyl slip covers for them. Yeah. So this is like so many, it's like endless the amount of things you need to do. I did the steering wheel video last week, that, and I didn't expect the video to get a bump. It got a pretty decent bump for a video that should have just been a reel. Yeah. You know, when we make things now, we always like, is this just a reel? Is this just a reel or is this a real video? So to put that in
perspective. If it's a reel, I don't take a video of it.
Yeah. My thought is, should I make this into three parts? This seems to be too much.
Yeah. So I made the video, which was ended up being like 12 minutes long, believe it or not, even with all my fast forwards. So the video is about 11 to 12 minutes long. I took the entire video and jammed it into the timeline down to 59 seconds. I stretched it. I compacted it. The entire video. I took out the very first clip. I jammed it all together. And then sometimes I'm looking at it and I'm like, this needs a little more time. That needs a little bit more time, like to recognize what I'm doing. So I'll jam it even further and take one clip and stretch it out like to 3 seconds. So I did that at the very end. So I jammed the whole thing down to like 52 seconds. And then I stretched out a couple of clips just so you could acknowledge them. It's amazing what your mind could recognize. And just taking a clip that's 1 second long and making it 2 seconds long. In comparison to a million other clips that are all 1 second long. It's amazing. So that's how I made my reel. And I refuse to cut my videos. You'll notice now if you look at, maybe nobody notices because I don't get a lot of views on my Instagram videos, but I refuse to do the telephone thing where you shoot a full video and then you cut it so people are too lazy to turn their phone, so you have to make it so it looks portrait. And then you cut out all the meat and potatoes of your shot. Yeah. So now I just jam my full video into the thing. So you're looking at landscape with a little tiny full 16:9 in the middle. I don't care.
I mean, you could just turn
to comply
the video so that it's so people are forced to turn their phone.
I've done that a couple times. Yeah. But I've done that a couple times, but people are too lazy.
So you're fitting it down to a minute, but reels can be 3 minutes now, right?
Well, the reason why I do a minute, this is another very good question, is because 3 minutes feels like it's 2 hours when we're all used to looking at 1 minute. Unless you really got something important to say, like, you know, some sort of political stance, which I'll never do. I'm serious.
Really important.
Or because you can only use the licensed music for a minute. So I've done like, I'm like, oh, I got 2 minutes, 3 minutes now. So I put like a real fast one. It's like, da, 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 and then I put a good song and the song ends at 1 minute. And then you get another minute of me just like slapping tools around. So you can't put 3 minutes of music over 3 minutes of video on Instagram. It's only 1 minute. So that's why now I'm still sticking in the 1 minute, because I like to put some funky songs over the things. And otherwise you end up with a dead video track, dead music bed.
Cool. I don't think I've ever used music from Instagram, like the, you know, like adding their music to
everything.
But cool.
And then if you take, I haven't done much of them, but if you take that same reel on Instagram and put it on YouTube, you can't, there's no music. They might have the selection. I mean, they have their own selection, but it's not popular music. It's just like stuff that people donate. You can't pick like a good Beach Boys song to put over the Woody on YouTube. On Instagram you can, which is why I kind of theme the whole Woody with Beach Boys music. It's just fun. Cool. And I don't have to pay for it. Yeah, you also don't make any money, so it doesn't matter.
And there's that. Yeah. Cool. David, what have you been doing?
I'm working on a giant, not somewhat giant, big 3 foot long cassette tape that's going to hang on the wall. It's not a working cassette tape, but it's just a piece of art.
That's cool.
I took a cassette tape and I, with calipers, I recreated the whole outside piece in Fusion and then scaled that up. So everything will be to scale. And, I'm basing it on my father. I'm sending you an image right now. My father had these blank cassette tapes and it had like this little rainbow on the one side of it.
Oh yeah.
And do you recognize that at all?
I do. They do seem familiar. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's going to have some veneer inlay and it's based on a blank cassette tape. So you can make a mixtape or whatever. And I haven't decided what I'm going to write as my what my mix tape is going to be called yet. Right now, I just have sad songs as a little placeholder, but I'm going to write something on paper, scan it, and then turn that into little veneers, and it will have a 3D effect. So, you know, cassette tapes have different layers, and there'll be a little window on there, and that's, this thing is going to hang on the wall. That is what I'm working on.
That's awesome. How big is the, like, how wide is this whole thing?
35 inches wide.
Oh, wow.
So almost 30 feet. It's, and it's, the first two layers are two layers of 3/4 inch plywood. I don't have any progress photos yet, but it will be pretty darn heavy. So I haven't figured out how to hang it to the wall yet, but one problem at a time.
This gives me an idea for a project that I'm not going to say, but I might talk to you about it.
Okay. So in my list of projects for many, many years, probably since the first Making It Live event 9 years ago, I've had this, I wanted to make a working wooden cassette tape cut with the laser, and I never have. And it's still on my list, and I see it all the time. And I don't, probably once I complete this, I can just check it off the list. Like, I don't really need to make a working cassette tape, but that has been something that I've been wanting to do. And maybe one day I'll record a song and put it on a wooden working cassette tape. Maybe.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. Cool. And I'll give it away at Making It 1000.
1000. Yeah. Podcasts won't even be a thing by then.
we'll move on to the next new form of media.
It's going to be reels. If you take podcasts and combine them with reels.
Oh my gosh, little 60-second podcast. I'm out. I'm done.
And then you got to put them through your player, so they're only 60 seconds preview, and then they stretch them out.
Or somehow, you know, we always go back to old forms of media, like cassette tapes are back. For some reason, CDs are coming back. You know, podcasts will only be in physical form, so you have to...
Track. No, you have to order the 8-track for the making
it. Oh, the 8-track, yes.
758. Okay, so that's a new thing. So the Patreon support in the future, and then 5 years from now, 6 months from now, whatever, is you're prepaying for like a record club. So you're paying to every month have an 8-track sent to you with that podcast on it.
That's amazing.
I think I found my business idea.
Yeah. The 8-track players, it kind of before my time, but one of the cars that I had an 8-track player in it. And one of the cool things about 8-track players was, like a cassette, you just have side A, side B. But 8-track, you could go to 4 different points within the cartridge. Do you remember this?
Yeah. I remember them very vividly.
Yeah.
There was basically 4 simultaneous sides. So you could click through wherever you are in one song, you would know that on another track, this other song you like is also there. So you get used to learn that tape. So you could always like jump through the 4 tracks. When I was a kid, I've never seen this before, and it's probably still in my mother's house. My dad bought me at a garage sale a little tiny box, like a Panasonic, with that era of everything that was cool from Panasonic, this little era. But it had mini cassettes, mini 8-tracks. So the mini 8-tracks, they were only 2 inches tall. And I have them with Beatles songs on them. Oh. It was like a new format. It was exactly an 8-track cassette, which is usually like 6 by 5 inches, maybe, and like almost 1 inch thick. But they were really tiny. Same
was it
shape.
Like a single? Just a single song?
The 2 songs. It was like a 45 album. Hmm. 2, maybe 3 songs. Yeah, because of the amount of tape it could hold. And you could go through the 2 songs. I think it was 2 tracks, maybe. I wonder. I always think about that. I wonder if now that we're talking about it, I wonder if it's still at my mom's house. Probably is.
Oh. That would be fun to pull out. So I have an 8-track story. So my very first car was a 1984 Pontiac Sunbird, and it had an oil leak, and so I always had to put like a quart of oil in it, like every week or so. And one day I forgot to put the oil cap back on, and I lost the oil cap. And so anybody who thinks I'm a moron or an idiot, this will prove them right. So I put a rag in the hole so the oil wouldn't splash out, so I could at least get to my destination. Well, that rig caught fire in the middle of driving. I had to pull over.
Oh, no.
And my car burned up. And so I no longer had a car. But
your car
I still
went
had
on
a...
fire? Your car actually went on fire?
Yeah, the whole thing burned up.
Oh, God.
Yeah. This was in the middle of winter, too. So I remember, like, going to the junkyard to try to salvage anything that was in the trunk or the back seat. And I remember my cassette tapes just being frozen to the ground because of all the water from the fire department, and everything was just, there was nothing I could save. But I still had a job. So my mom, who I wasn't living with, had a 1978 Chrysler something or other, big boat of a car, super loud. She just gave it to me so I could get to my job. And it was one of those cars where you had to turn it off when you went through the drive-through at McDonald's because it was so loud. And not like a cool loud. It was like,
that's kind of like my Land Cruiser.
Yeah. And it had an 8-track player in there. And so I got an 8-track from my stepdad. It was the Eagles' Greatest Hits. And that's all I listened to in that car for 1 year, was the Eagles' Greatest Hits. And I can sing them all word for word.
Hmm. My friend Dave had a car when we were in high school that had an 8-track in it. And it was another one of those big, I don't remember what kind of car it was, but it was a big boat of a car. And I remember it had an 8-track player in it. And this was in the 90s, you know, like he had just inherited this car like down the road somewhere. And he had like 3 or 4 8-tracks. And at that point, you couldn't get them anywhere. It's not like you could go to a used store and like pick, nobody kept them, right? And so we listened to the same, and I don't even remember what they were, but the same 3 or 4 albums, like all summer long until
I hope it was Foghat.
I remember there was a Zeppelin one, and I don't remember which album it was, but I don't remember what the other ones were. I do remember that the headliner in that car was, when he got it, was falling out. So it was, you know, it was like hanging down, and so mm-hmm. you don't push it up. And then at some point we got annoyed with it, and he just reached up and ripped it out. So we pulled the headliner off, and then it was like, anybody that has a sticker, give Dave the stickers, and he's going to put it. So by the time the car died, the entire top of the inside of the car was covered in stickers. You know, like Journeys, yeah. Shoe store stickers and stuff like that. But
my next car after that did the thing where it would want to touch your head. So I took a razor blade and I cut it all the way down, and then took spray adhesive and sprayed it on the inside to mesh it back up. And that worked for a little bit, but the heat in the summertime would, yeah. it would lose its adhesion. And so eventually you just got to take it all down.
Yeah. My dad had a 78 Cadillac. He got it from one of the clients he worked for. It was beautifully, perfectly preserved. I've never seen the trim package ever again. And I loved that car. And I was like, oh, you'll get this car. You'll get this car. And one day he called me and he says, I got bad news. I go, what? He goes, the Cadillac was rear-ended. And I was like, no way. He was at a red light. Somebody hit him. And it was destroyed. The whole back was destroyed. It was all pushed up and bent. So he said, it's yours. Take it. Do whatever you want with it. Cut it up. Yeah, he had to buy a new car. So he knew that I loved the car. He's like, here, you could either fix it or whatever. So I actually took the, you could still drive it. You could still drive it. I had to bend the rear fender out of the wheel. And I drove it. I had the frame straightened out. And then I got a donor car that I saw sitting in someone's yard. I found it and I got the people. So it was a 78 Cadillac Coupe de Ville. And I got the donor car dropped off in my driveway. My mother thought I was out of my mind. This is right when I was in college, I think. Yeah, I was still in school of visual arts. And I had the frame straightened out, and I had the whole corner, I cut the whole corner off myself, the whole rear corner, it was the driver's side. And I cut the whole rear quarter off of the donor car. First time I'd ever done that. I was cutting rivet holes and everything. And I was able to retrofit the entire rear quarter of the Cadillac, but I had to peel back the beautiful vinyl roof because I had to make the weld under the vinyl roof. So I never was able to fix it. So I had this beautifully, like 3/4 of the car was a perfect, beautiful cream colored Cadillac with a green rear quarter on it, like welded into place. But the point of the story is that when my dad gave it to me, I brought in somewhere I found Thin Lizzy Jailbreak, which was
yeah.
the cassette that lived in that, wherever that car is right now, that's stuffed into the front seat. And then also when my dad had it, this was always in there. So it was there from the minute he got the car. Every time we were in it, Folsom Prison, live at Folsom Prison.
Nice.
So those two albums were in that car. Wherever that car is right now, those two albums are in that car.
Nice.
I think the takeaway from the story is Jimmy at a
You're
young
old.
age could hack together anything, because you must have been a teenager, right? Just
I
welding
did.
this car together.
That was, yeah. And I started school 86, 87. So that was around 88 when I did that. Yeah.
That's crazy.
So, and the funny
These
thing,
days, you would have just made it out of wood. You replaced the whole back of the car.
Well, don't laugh. A couple of years later, I ended up taking my brother had a four-door Oldsmobile, an 80s version of an Oldsmobile, and something happened to it, and he was just like, we should junk it. I was like, can I try and make it into a pickup truck? So I cut the whole back and made it into a pickup truck, all out of plywood. And you could open the rear doors to get under the bed. So if you could always like store stuff in what would have been the back seats, but you open. And I never closed in the cab. Somewhere I have pictures of this. I did this in the 90s. And the cab was always open to the air. So if you drive in the car, it was like an El Camino with no back window. I just never finished it. And eventually I did put in a piece of canvas and a bunch of button snaps so you could like canvas out with a little portal window. I got to make another one of those. I've been wanting to do that same thing out of a Cadillac and not an Oldsmobile. I've been talking about that for a long time. But the Cadillac with the 8-track cassettes in it, I knew I never had the wherewithal or the skill set to paint it perfectly. So the back was always it was the cream colored yellow with the lime colored green rear quarter. And the tailgate, I've got these rubber things. You ever see them on a Jeep? Like you pull it up and you hook it.
Oh, yeah.
I found those somewhere at like a swap meet, and I put those on the tail. So to open the tailgate of the deck lid of the caddy, you'd have to pull these two rubber clips off. And this story gets a little long, not too long, but I was in a bar once in the Lower East Side, and when I moved to the Lower East Side, that was my car. And sometimes I'd find the trunk open because everybody's scavenging for stuff. You just lift it and you pop it open and see if there's anything in it. And I was in the bar called Mama's Bar on Avenue B, and this is years later, and I look in the and there's an old picture of the neighborhood before it changed. So this was like 92, 91, 92. And I see in the picture, I'm like, wait a minute, give me that picture. And the guy takes it off the wall and gives it to me across the bar as my friend was bartending. I go, that's my car. So now it's like 15 years later. I like, that's my car parked right on the corner of the old neighborhood where there was this like big art installation. I'm like, that's my car. That's my old Cadillac that my dad gave me that I fixed. And so this whole picture, I got it somewhere in my Cadillac is in there, and I could tell it's mine because it's got the two rubber things on the back deck. And Niles was his name. He called me like a few days later. He's like, hey, I got a surprise for you. I go, what? And he gives me the full picture. He worked at the bar. He goes, I just took the original picture out of the frame, had it photocopied at Kinko's, and then replaced the picture on the wall with the photocopy. And he gave me the full print that some artist made. Nobody famous, but it was like just some local artist that
That's cool.
taking this picture out of the window. And so for years it was in my apartment. So somewhere I got to find it. I'll post it when I find it. It might be at the other shop. When I moved out of the city, it just went in a box.
I have to shout out my friend. So when I was like 18, 19, 20, my friend Brian Smith, who sometimes listens to this podcast, so I have to say this, his dad used to hack together two cars. Like he would just chop off the back end of one car and then just add it to another car. And I had never heard of this in my life. And so that was just absolutely amazing as a kid. So shout out to Mike Smith and Brian Smith.
It's funny because that even now, and all the stuff that all of us have made, and knowing Jimmy, so knowing what's possible, even now, that sounds like just a terrible rabbit hole to get
Right.
two cars to cut them in half and try to stick them together. How many things don't you know about how those have to work together to get everything working, and
Yeah.
make it like drivable and stuff?
It's like doing a
That
head
still seems
transplant.
just crazy to me.
It's like doing a
Yeah.
head transplant on a human body.
Yeah. Yeah, it
Yeah.
is like doing a head transplant on a
But
human
you don't
body.
need a lung, you don't need a lung machine while you're doing
That's
it.
pretty wild. I don't know. That's wild to think about.
That reminds me of the episode of Chips. You guys are too young. You remember Chips? Remember Chips?
I love
That's
chips.
the
I love
cops. Yeah.
yeah. Do you remember the episode of Chips where there was a crazy car show? It was like a crazy car show. So they were getting all these complaints of all the car, like there was a car driving backwards. It was just because the whole car was set up backwards. You drive a car forwards, but you sit in the back seat facing the wrong way. And I remember that episode of Chips, and I was always intrigued with the idea of in that same episode, there were two cars. It was like, say, two Cadillacs. You cut it in half and you put the two fronts together so the car could go either way. It's still going forwards. So the whole episode was about all these like wacky cars, and people were panicking on the highway seeing a car going the wrong way. It was so stupid. I'm like, it's not that big of a deal. You see the car from miles away going, oh, look at that interesting car. But they...
It's funny. All those shows from that era had a moment where they did stuff like that, where it was like, oh, there's a weird car show going on in Venice Beach or whatever, so let's go over and film it and then turn it into an episode. And like, yeah. Dukes Hazzard would have like, you know, there's, I don't know, some ridiculous thing that they wrap an episode around just to show off this kind of pop culture thing. There's a bug in here flying in front of
growling. Did you get it?
No, I did not get it. It's still flying around. Sorry.
That reminds me, by the way, when I lived in, what is the name of the town? Ventura
New
Boulevard.
York.
No, in California. Right in the valley. I forget the name of the town.
Wait,
right
you in, live in California?
I lived in California when I shot the TV show Trash to Cash for 4 months.
Yeah.
And I got an apartment. I kept the apartment for a year because we all thought the show was going to come back. And I ended up giving up the apartment. But it was I can't remember the name of the town. Anyway, it's right over the right into the valley on Ventura Boulevard right there. And I lived right near the Corvette hand wash. Some people in California know what I'm talking about. There was a hand wash. There was a big hand holding a Corvette. I lived right around the block from that sign. And I'd go to the Starbucks on the corner there. And Ponchirelli was always in the Starbucks. And he drove a black Rolls Royce. And he must have had kids. So this is 2002. He had a Rolls Royce, and the back window of the Rolls Royce was covered with little stickers. As I was thinking to myself, like, that Rolls Royce is like completely past its prime. It, for him, now it's just a way to get around. It's no longer a status symbol. And the back seat had stickers all over both of the windows from his kids.
The seats are just like full of Cheerios.
Exactly. But it was a black Rolls Royce. So people who live in that area are going to be like, they're like punching the air right now going, I know exactly what he's talking about. Because he would always, you'd see it in the Ralph's parking lot all the time. It's like, oh, there's Ponch's car. And he's inside shopping for food.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. And Cuba Gooding Jr., I'd see him in that parking lot all the time too. He drove a Mercedes convertible. I had my Vespa. I drove my Vespa there. That's what I had.
You know, and they're probably on their podcast. I mean,
right.
One time I saw Jimmy Dresden on his Vespa at the...
Yeah.
I had a New York plate, so everywhere I went, everybody like stopped me and go, did you drive that here from New York?
Yeah, you man.
Know, I put it in a rider truck. True story.
Cool. Well, I haven't really done... I mean, I've done stuff this week, but nothing of note. I did call about the, you know, so I've been talking about building the pool shed in our backyard, and I did finally call the city and ask about the whole square footage thing. And it turns out that it is, they measure square footage by the exterior framing. So not the eaves, just the footprint of the building itself on the ground, which is awesome. Because now I get to make the building a little bit bigger. The bad thing is that now I have to model the building again for like the fourth time or fifth time or something to, because I've been making adjustments. Like I've made it one way that was too big, made it too small, whatever. But I finally have like a definitive answer on that. And so I can like really do the final model and start like buying materials and stuff, which is cool. I'm looking forward to building that. And it's getting about the right season. Like it's starting to cool off here a little bit. It's not cool, but... You know, it's not like 1,000 degrees like it was last week. So trying to get stuff in line so that as it starts turning into fall, I can be out there building, you know, and like take advantage of the good weather and then get it closed in before winter time. But that's kind of what I've been doing, a lot of modeling and a lot of trying to figure out. I'm trying to be really intentional about in that modeling process about, you know, if I lay out the studs this way on this wall, I'm trying to then put the sheathing over top of that and make sure everything lines up. So I'm learning stuff about, oh, well, you know, in the framing layer, I can't just do start at this corner and go 16 that way and then make up the difference at the end. Like I got to think about where the sheathing starts so that it lines up with the framing. And do that on every wall, and then how do the wall framing overlap? And I know for somebody who builds builds stuff and does construction, that's like second nature. They've been through that 1,000 times, so they don't even have to think about it. But I've never had to really think about those order of operations and how stuff lines up correctly. And I want to do it the right way. So, you know, there's a lot of adjustment. Same for the room, you know. But
you since you are modeling everything out, you probably don't have to buy 30% more materials to cover whatever, because you're not estimating. You know exactly what you need.
Yeah. I mean, I'll still get quite a bit because I'm sure I'm going to mess up. But, you know, all it takes is, you know, cutting a stud, you know, an inch too short or something before that's useless. Yeah. But
are you going to heat it? It's going to be 4 seasons?
Not initially. I think, you know, I just want to get it built as a kind of dumb shed, you know, just like an empty shed first, and then I'll look at doing electrical and all that stuff later. And we don't have a lot of power out there. There is power at the pool equipment, but I don't think there's enough bandwidth to get power out there to do like air conditioning and lights and plugs and stuff. So I probably kind of be picky. Although I was thinking about solar, which is something I've never had really any reason to look into. To see if using solar out there on the roof would be enough to maybe power a small AC unit or something. The bad thing is that the way I'm laying out the roof line is not ideal for how the sun is when it comes to solar, but I don't think I'm willing to completely change the way the building looks just for the opportunity of using solar, you know? So I don't know. We'll see. So we did kind of have a topic. It was a very vague topic.
Yeah. When things go right.
Exactly.
And that's it. And so I find myself, when things are going right, you start to think like, okay, where is it going to go wrong? Or I get real pleased with myself because I hit a milestone, and then I just sit back and look, and I have a hard time getting to the next step because I just want to soak in the things going right for a little bit. And so I don't know where we're going to go with this, but what happens when things go right?
Well, I have a question for you about that. I mean, as you've gotten older, how has your response to that changed when things go well?
I think things go right a little bit more often now than when I was younger. And that's probably because I do a lot more planning now.
A lot more thinking on the subject.
A lot more thinking, yeah. Especially if I'm drawing something up first, or if I'm making a list of operations that needs to be done and writing down measurements, things go right a lot more. But where things usually... So I don't mess up projects that much. What happens is a bandsaw blade breaks, or a bandsaw completely stops working for 3 weeks, or, you know, and you're in a zone, and now all of a sudden the planer dust collector is full and you have to empty it. But while emptying it, you spill the whole thing and your day is ruined, right? So I'm pretty good about planning. So things usually go well. It's the little things that you don't have control of that kind of ruin everything for me. Yeah, I plan on things going right more than I plan on things going wrong. That's for sure.
Well, and I think that was kind of where I was wondering about is, you know, what is your expectation? I think, at least for me, when I was younger, maybe that you're being naive enough to think that things are just generally going to go right all the time. And the things going wrong in life or in a project or whatever are the outlier. And I think as you get older, maybe I've gotten more cynical in certain times of my life where it's like, well, now I expect for the stuff to go wrong more often than that goes right. And I think I've swung back as I've gotten into another life where I think that cynicism, I can see where that came from and everything, but I don't think that's a way to live. So I've tried to be more just like, let's assume that things are going to be fine one way or the other. And even if something goes wrong, I don't see it in the same way as I used to see it as huge, as big of a deal. It's easier to bounce back from stuff just like going off the rails a little bit, I think. And that's a lot for me at least, to do with attitude. But
there's 100%.
There's a phrase that Jimmy said years ago that sticks with me, and that is like, "What happens if it all works out?"
Right.
You know, when you're starting something new. I think when I was younger, there's just like, I don't know what I'm doing, so I don't really have any expectations. Maybe this works, maybe this doesn't. And now I have a lot of expectations for each individual project, and I tend to underestimate how long something is going to take almost every single time, because I think I'm expecting things to go right. So I'm estimating time for what should actually happen. And I'm not very good at taking into account wiggle room.
Yeah, I always try and plan a project that's going to give me enough time to have at least one extra day to present, whether it's a YouTube video or more often than not, it's for a client work. If I'm going to do something that has to please somebody, I make sure that I start it early enough so that when we look at the finished piece, if there's any changes need to be made, we still have a couple of extra days to tweak it or to make it look better. So I always try and pre-plan to make sure things go right. But yesterday, my experience was I got a call from I talked about this earlier, the guy who's handling my insurance or registration. And he's like, "You got to get it weighed." And I was like, oh, right away when he said that, I'm like, that's going to be a debacle. I'm going to lose. It's going to fall off my trailer halfway to the scale. So I got to like put the car, I got to take the car, pull it on a trailer, put it on a trailer, which yesterday I was all alone. So I got it on a trailer. Then I have to drive it to a scale, take it off, weigh the car, put it back on the scale, and then go home the whole time, making sure I don't lose the car off the trailer, which anytime you trailer anything, there's a million possibilities for anything to go wrong, even if it seems simple. So in the morning I woke up and I thought to myself, this is the type of thing, this is also how I psych myself up. In the morning I said, I got a long, hard day ahead of me. I'm working alone. All my guys aren't available. And I got to load this car up. I got to drive it right at the moment. While I started in the morning, I thought I had to take it to the scale, the truck scale, which was about 25 miles away. Me and Rob researched. We found a scale in Coxsackie, which is like 25 miles from my house. And the day before, I went and researched it just to see what I was up against, to make sure it wasn't one of those scales on the highway where the state troopers make sure the car is good when you go on and off the scale, or versus. So it ended up being at a truck plaza, which is a private business. And you could pull in. And I said to the guys at the counter, I said, I got to weigh an antique car tomorrow. He's like, yeah, come in. You can just take all the time you want. It was off in the corner. It wasn't in the path of anybody. I wouldn't have been in the way. And so I woke up in the morning, and this is how I psych myself up. I'm like, no matter what happens, by 6 o'clock tonight, this task will have been done. Regardless. So I say to myself, in the next, whatever happens between now and 6 o'clock, this task is going to be checked off my list. Just know that I just have to live through whatever pain and suffering I have to put myself through. And it's funny, Rachel's away, but we've been texting about it. She's like, good luck. She knows it's kind of a stress point for me. And so I get it on the Woody up on the trailer, and I pull it out of my garage backwards. So the engine compartment is all behind the rear wheels, the furthest away from the trailer hitch. And I realize how bouncy it is. And I'm like, wow, it really should have been turned around. So I drive to the milk run. I strap it all down. I drive to the milk run, and I see the guy that owns the milk run is a very experienced farmer, grew up here. And I always defer to him for any farm or technical stuff. So I go, Carl, is this not safe to drive to Coxsackie? And he goes, as long as you stay under 50 miles an hour, he goes, it'll be willy wobbly. He goes, you'll be all right. He goes, just go slow. And he goes, why don't you just go down the block to the other place? And he goes, go to B&B Forestry. They got a scale. I go, I didn't know it was there. He goes, yeah, go there. Tell them I sent you. So instead of driving like 28 miles, which is really the number, I only had to drive like 4. So I'm like, awesome. So I drove over there, and the woman at the counter knew me. Her son watches my show. So I was like, I'm in there. And they're like, okay. Like, they go, bring the whole rig onto the scale, which I was right near. It was right there. This is like down the block from my house, but I never went in there. I just see the sign on the street, but I didn't know when you turn in there, there's this giant complex with timbers and trucks and everything in a scale. So I pull in, they weigh my whole thing, 17,000, 20 pounds. And they go, all right, just get rid of the car and come back and weigh it again. And so I went home, safely got the truck off the thing by myself, got it inside the shop, and went back there and weighed it. And the difference was 4,400 pounds. But after all was said and done, by like 1 o'clock, I was like, it's over. Smoothly. I didn't flip it over on the highway on the, you know, 20 miles from the house. And there were a couple moments, even though I only had to go 4 miles, you get up to like 40 miles an hour, and then you're like 42, 43, you feel the back of the car start doing like the wobble. And that's because I don't have enough tongue weight. And I had you see guys on the highway when they start getting that oscillation, and I always wonder, why don't you just immediately stop? And they keep going, and then all of a sudden the wobble's too far out of whack, and then everything flips apart. So as soon as I felt a little bit of the wobble, once I hit like 42, 43 miles an hour, I hit the brakes and came to a complete stop. And then you got to start again. You got to literally get rid of that oscillation. You can't just go slower. You can't go slower and it's going to get less. Once it starts, you can't get rid of it. You have to come to a complete stop and then go again. In all actuality, I should have offloaded it and turned it around so the weight was up front. So now I know better. But at the end of the day, I had the feeling from 1 o'clock all the way until midnight was something's going to go wrong. Oh no, everything went well. Impending doom. There's this impending doom. That's a long story to tell you. This impending doom that still wants its due, but you're like, nope, you can't get in it. Everything went well. You're not getting it. Whether it's like my adventure with the truck trailer, or whether it's a CNC project, there's this impending doom that it's all going to go off the rails. You're going to break the only bit you have. Somebody needs to see the sample in the morning, and you don't have the wherewithal to finish it. But when it goes well and you're looking at the finished piece, that impending doom is still like, but what about me? You're like, you can go home now. We don't need you anymore.
A side note, whoever may need to weigh something is metal scrap yards will have a thing where you can drive your. So there's a place down there. I had to get my trailer weighed to get it registered. And so, I just went to the local scrap yard. And it's only, it was like $10 or something like that. And they did the same thing. You weigh it with it on, you weigh it with it off, you do the subtraction. And that's how they know how much metal that you're throwing into the scrapyard. So, I definitely will play up the negative aspect of something coming up. And then you're like, oh, why did I worry so much all the time?
Yeah. Well, there's a saying, and I can't remember exactly how it goes, but it's something like plan for the worst, hope for the best, or
expect the worst, be pleasantly surprised when everything goes well.
Yeah, but I mean, I think there's something to that, you know, if you go into any of those situations and just assume that everything's going to go right, but plan for if it doesn't, like leaving extra time in the day or having a backup blade or whatever. I mean, you get pleasantly surprised probably more often than not. That it's not the worst case scenario, that everything didn't go. And I think your point of by 6 o'clock, it's going to be done like hell or high water. It's over.
I'll be waiting for a tow truck or it'll be done.
So like we had some friends get married this past weekend, and I've told this to so many young married couples on the day of their wedding. They, you know, everything is piling up. It's overwhelming. There's so much stuff to do the day before and the whatever, and somebody's mad at somebody and somebody doesn't want to sit, you know, and it just gets like weddings are very stressful for the people in the wedding. And I've told this to many couples at the end of the day, all of this is over and you're married. So it doesn't even matter what happens between now and, you know, end of ceremony, end of like you drive off together or whatever. That's the part that matters. So all you got to do is get through it. Like stuff's going to go wrong. And the same thing for, you know, driving a car on top of another car to go get it weighed. I mean, like stuff's going to go wrong, but then it's over and the car's off the other car, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's an important thing to remember because it's easy for us to get, especially once stuff starts going wrong, it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, the thing broke. Okay, well, now I have to come up with another plan, and that plan is going to be subpar. And it's a whole new set of opportunities for things to break, for things to go wrong. And then you start thinking that stuff's going to break. You start getting frustrated, and then you're going to make stuff break, and you're going to make stuff go wrong, you know. And not that you can decide for everything to go right and make that happen, but I think if you decide that things are going to go wrong, they will find a way to go wrong.
It's so... I hate to bring this up, but my father, anytime we're going to go to a restaurant, something went wrong and he anticipated something going wrong every time, somebody screwing up his order. And for whatever reason, it we always have the same,
are
happens.
We brothers? Are
we might be. We might be. And and you know, my he would blow
is
up.
Your,
my,
is your dad's dad middle name? Is your dad's middle name Julio?
It is not, but we might be related somehow. And I hated going to restaurants or even through a drive-thru with him because he anticipated something going wrong. Something would go wrong. He would blow up. It would be a scene. And it was so embarrassing to me. Mm. And
I lived the same exact experience.
Yeah. So now if I order a cheeseburger and it comes with ketchup on it, I'll just deal with it.
I complain when I go to a restaurant, I complain about nothing.
Nothing. Absolutely because, nothing.
You
same.
Know what? In 3 hours from now, I'll eat again.
Right. That's a good point. That's a good point.
That's a very good point.
There's like kind of a family joke among a couple of my friends. We go to a restaurant, me and my dad would say to them, he'd flirt with the waitress. He'd be nice as pie. And he said, I really like hot fries. When my fries come, make sure they're really
we
hot.
Are related. We are related. Because, dude, every single time we went through the drive-thru at McDonald's or Wendy's, my dad would say, he would always say at the big window. Speaker thing, make sure the fries are hot. And the people got to know him so well that they would say, sir, your fries will be hot.
Yeah, and then when the fries come and they're not hot, my dad like tastes one and like throws it down. He's like, fries are cold.
Oh my goodness.
Meal is ruined. I'm like, it's not ruined.
It's you not have, ruined.
You live in the first world. You can have whatever you want.
Oh my goodness. Our dads are hanging out right now.
Oh my God, they're complaining about every restaurant they've ever been to. The best is when we were all young enough to mess with in my neighborhood, we'd go to the pizza place and we'd loosen the salt caps.
I got detention for that once.
Me and my brothers and my dad had pizza at the pizza place where we would all loosen the salt caps, but we had just gotten there, so who knows what salt caps are loosened? We didn't know. And the guy, my dad picked up the pizza and dumped the entire bottle of salt onto his pizza. And me and my brothers like almost spit our food out laughing so hard. He did not see the humor in it. He like had to go get a new slice of pizza. And they're like, and the guy's like, why'd you pour all the salt on? He's like, I didn't do it on purpose. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Funny.
Yeah.
Well. Any other thoughts on this?
I never want to make somebody else's life harder. So, like, in public, like, I will always treat waiters, waitresses,
100%.
Any public service person, like, with absolute respect because I'm so thankful for their service. I don't want to make anything harder for them because their job is already hard enough.
Oh, yeah.
And that's probably just me responding to my childhood.
Well, when I say, what if everything works out, is a direct response to my father constantly saying, what if it goes wrong? And him stuck in that mindset of everything's horrible, everything's going to go wrong. And I just expect it. And when it does, I'm going to declare my day is ruined. Just like right. I expected it to be.
I mean, it's pretty easy to expect everything to go wrong and then be vindicated.
Yeah.
You know, because then you're on the lookout. Every little cold fry, every little thing that is not ideal proves you right.
This is turning into a little bit of a therapy session, but when my dad would be like, oh, we got ketchup on the hot dogs, everything's ruined. And me and my brothers and my sister was a little too young, but we'd be like, no, everything's not ruined. It's just a hot dog. We can go buy new ones, which, you know, okay. So you have to spend an extra $18. It's not the end of the world. You know, my dad was also very frugal. And if he had to spend more than he needed to, the day was ruined. And But me and my brothers being like, it's not that big of a deal, has grown us up into being people that are like, it's not that big of a deal. Like the other day in my brand new truck, well, it's not brand new now. It's 2 years old. When I drove into a pillar in my driveway, one of those pillars that protects like the fire hydrant in my field where my big shop is down the block, there was an EPA problem. And so there's like 7 or 10 spots throughout the whole property where the EPA has to come and check the water table all the time. So in the middle of all the parking lots there, there's like random spigots sticking up for the EPA to come and check. And then the spigot sticks up and there's 2 steel poles. And the other day, I went to drive past one, and I was too close, and I crunched my rear fender on my dually. And the sound was like maddening, like the metal. And I just like backed up, looked out my window, went, oh, well, and then drove away. But if it was my dad, he would have made like he got hit with a nuclear weapon. It would have been like the end of the world. He probably would have started crying because it would have been too devastating that this new car has a dent on it. So I went home and I banged the dent out. I went to a guy. They gave me a quote. He's going to fix it in a couple of months. It was a pretty severe dent, but it wasn't that bad. I wasn't able to like not drive anymore. And then I say to myself, I'm so glad that I own a $100,000 truck and that I could like for now still pay for it. And that it's, you know, instead of being like, oh my God, everything's horrible. And I'm like, I got my first scratch. So I don't have to worry about scratching it.
You got to get that first one out of the way.
Yeah. 3 years in, 2.5 years in, I hit something. So I banged the dent out. I learned about how thick the steel is on those things. I was up underneath the car. I welded like things on it to pull the dent out. Just a small dent, but it's the type of dent that's $1,500 to fix, which is not a lot. You know, when you're thinking that could be, you know, when you get a modern car fixed, it could be $5,000-$6,000 for simple things. So the guy said, so I'm going to get it fixed in a couple of weeks. But so, I always take those moments in my life and being like, everything's going pretty good. If I have a dent in my car, it's not a big deal. Yeah, you know, everything's pretty good. Everything's really good. So
this might be an oversimplification of, because we're talking about like just the kind of hands-on skills of stuff, like you being able to work on that dent yourself to a point, right? But I would think in general, at least when it comes to those types of failures, maker culture is in a particularly interesting spot because all of us are kind of like problem-solving people who are willing and at least kind of skilled to take on a problem like that, a dent, a break, a bad joint on something and be like, it's not that big of a deal because I made it the first time. I can make it again. I've welded things before. I can weld this back together. I can, you know. And so, whereas I think maybe general public who don't have a history in hands-on making stuff or fixing stuff, maybe to them, some of those problems are like legitimate problems, like bigger, you know, because they don't have any idea how to, you're muted, Jimmy. They don't have any idea how to go about that fix. For us, it's just like, well, yeah, I'm just going to jump in and do the thing that I do every day.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Maybe we can identify with maybe there's other non-maker physical stuff that is a bigger deal, you know, money stuff or relation stuff that, those problems maybe hit us in a different way than physical stuff does.
But. Yeah.
Yep. Either way, I think it's really good to have the attitude of it's going to be okay,
And then deal with things. You know, and then this is another thing in negotiating with the people around me as life and finances gets more stressful. You got to like, it's a real thing when you could say to yourself, you know what, I'm able bodied, I'm healthy. You know, you see, if your physical starts going bad, there's nothing. There's no amount of money that could save, you know, for instance, a devastating illness. So if things are going bad and you're having a bad day and you're able-bodied and you got sound mind and body, that's a great compensation at the end of the day. You know, that if you got your health, basically you got your health. If you got nothing else, you got your health. And so that's one good thing to always keep in mind.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
Cool. Any other thoughts on this?
Dave, how do you like your hot dogs? With ketchup or without ketchup?
Ketchup.
Mustard?
No mustard. I'm not a fan of mustard. Ketchup only.
So your dad would get mad if there were ketchup on hot dogs?
No, if the order came back wrong, he would just get mad.
Oh, I see.
You know, whether it was. I remember we went, when I was a little kid, we drove to Florida. I must have been about 6 or 7 years old in the family Plymouth station wagon with the seats that face backwards at the back. And we were in Maryland or someplace or Virginia, and we went into the McDonald's and we all got hamburgers and they all came back with mustard on them. And that's when I learned about how regional tastes change. And in New York, you don't get mustard on a hamburger, not from McDonald's. But in Maryland, you got like 7 or 8 hamburgers for everybody in the car. And me and my brother started peeling back the bummer, like, what is this yellow stuff? And we were completely, and my dad was like, he didn't want to lose the $12
he spent.
You know, he must have spent at least probably $10 or $12 in 1974 on all these hamburgers. He was not going to throw them away. And he like took one at a time and wiped it off. Wiped. He's like, it's cheese. It's not. And we're like, that's not cheese. Don't lie to us. It's not cheese. He wiped it all off and he like, put them back together. And we were like, kind of like, yeah, like ate them and threw them out the window as we were eating. We didn't notice. But, yeah. That's I always fun. Remember that. But then my mother casually explained that sometimes when you go to different parts of the country, the overall tastes of people are different. And that's why when we got, you know, but meanwhile, my dad's like lying. I was like, geez, just eat it. He's like, not going to go back and order all new ones with no mustard on them.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, big thanks to our Patreon supporters who make the show possible. We are super grateful for all the support over there. And there's a lot of people at all different levels that support the show. They all get the after show, which is a separate podcast after this one. That's why we call it the after show.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter how much you support on Patreon, you get the after show. It's a separate feed, you know. So you can get that by signing up to Patreon, and there's a link to it right up there. And then there's also video for the after show on YouTube that you can get a link to as well. But everybody gets that over there, no matter the amount. But there are a group of people that go above and beyond, well above and beyond, to support the show. We are really grateful for them. That's Nick Ryan, Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Mancrafting, Rich at Low End Design, Odin Leather Goods, Scott at Dad It Yourself DIY, the new Janky Workshop, Warren Works, Michael Minigin, Matthias Garnell, A Pretty Big Deal, Inc., and Pete Rondo. But also people like, oh, where'd my Safari go? People like Joe Kaufman. Joe has been supporting us for like 8 years.
What?
Thank you, Joe. That's
thank awesome. You.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you can go to patreon.com/makingit and sign up. At any level. And a lot of those people we're going to be seeing at the 500 event, which mm-hmm. is really cool. Looking forward to that. I know we've had a lot of people posting on Patreon, you know, that they're coming and stuff. So it's cool to see a list of people saying they're going to be there or whatever. But cool. You guys got anything to recommend? I've got a pretty good one this week.
I got a decent one.
I have an Instagram page, which I can read it because it's in Arabic. But it's amazing. When you think, do you remember like the gates, like the Palace of Versailles, right? You think of the gates at the Palace of Versailles. There's this factory or this group of guys that make these giant palace gates in Iran. It's in Tehran. And I'll send you guys the link. I can't read it. I'll send you a screen grab and the link. But the only words written in English is Villa Darbs. Villa Darb. And the... Anyway, I'll send you the link. We could put it in the show notes. It's really insane. I'm sending you guys just the image, but it's these incredible. I started following all these non-English speaking channels, but they make incredible things. And so they've gotten recommended to me. And this is one of them, but it's really all about what they're making, which I love.
Crazy.
And these guys are casting, welding. If you dig deep into their imagery, you see how they make some of this stuff. But most of the images of are the installs. And it's just insane. It makes me want to get these big palace gates for my property.
Oh, man.
Whoa, those are, yeah. Yeah, I think.
I need them, right?
Yes, you absolutely need
them. When you think of all, it's like all Corinthian design with the Corinth leaves all bent and turned.
Wow, those are beautiful.
When we think about like trying to do something that's opulent, this is like opulent times 10.
Mm-hmm.
So it pops up. I can never search it because I wouldn't know. It popped up, so I saved it. But every once in a while, the way me and Derek save stuff is we send it to each other so that we can go into our conversation and see
screenshot and send it to each other.
No, like something like this, if it's a link that I'll never be able to find again because I won't remember how to type this in. Me and Derek are just sending stuff back and forth all the time that are inspirational, but we both know it's more so we know where it is later when we want to look at it again.
Cool. What you got, David?
So last night, Drew Witt sent me a link.
Oh, it's the same one I was going to say. Dang it, Drew.
It's pretty good. So it's a channel called Super Valid Designs, And this guy 3D printed every single instrument to make quote unquote a hit song. And so he sent me the link to the actual song, which is like 2 or 3 minutes long. I watched it and thought, that was pretty good. And then his other video, it came out before that, was the making of all the instruments and how the song was made. Pretty darn good. It's a good pick.
Well, mine is a video that Drew Witt sent me of a guy that 3D printed.
Oh, interesting.
Thanks, Drew.
Thank you, Drew.
Thought I was special. That was sarcasm for Drew. No, that was actually really cool. It was,
Drew,
it was
next time awesome. Send me something and don't send it to Bob.
Likewise. Cool. You guys got anything else for this week?
You should recommend Drew Witt's channel.
Oh, them. Yeah, there you go. Drew.
Yeah, there we go.
Drew's awesome. Go check out Drew Witt. Witt's Woodworks. Witt Works.
Maybe I shouldn't even say this, but I am. But when I hit 1 million subscribers, I'm gonna eat my first taco. He invited me out to San Antonio to have an authentic taco.
That'd be cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That would be cool.
Yeah. Make sure you check out Drew. He's got some really good stuff.
Beautiful new shop. He really did an impeccable job. Really beautiful.
Yeah. All right, cool. I'll put him in the notes as well. You guys got anything else this week?
The Field of Tools at the Blackthorn Resort. That's this weekend. If you're listening today, it starts today, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The Field of Tools at the Blackthorn Resort, which is the same location where we do the Maker Camp. And at that resort, at that event, we're going to have all types of cast iron available from guys coming. Keith Rucker's coming, Andrew Alexander's coming, and several other people coming from the Maker community. My hit and miss engines will be there that I bought from Mr. Pete. So it's going to be good.
Cool.
And they have to show, I'm going to talk about how I 3D printed a to scale.
Oh, yeah.
Cassette tape and how it broke my tape player.
Oh, no. Did you put a cassette in it?
I'll explain in the after show.
Okay. Cool. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you.
Catch you next time.
Love you.